Welcome to the Alliance of Independent Authors Insights Interview, a monthly podcast for self-publishing writers and author publishers. You can join our organization at allianceindependentauthors.org. Here, each month, a key self-publishing figure is interviewed by Ally Director Orna Ross. So, let's see who's sharing insights with Orna this month.
Hello and good evening from London. It's my very great pleasure here today to be talking to Mr. Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo all the way across in San Francisco. Hi, Grant.
Hey, Orna. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's fantastic to have you here. We're such fans of NaNoWriMo at Ally and just absolutely love what happens every November. And so many of our members get involved. And I got involved myself this year with my son. We wrote together. He wrote a play, actually, Breaking the Rules entirely. And I did really well, too. I was really happy with it. So, yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's just such a great thing. And I'm really excited to be able to talk to you a little bit more about it and where it came from and talk to people about what to do with all those drafts that are kind of lying around all over the world for people who are not quite sure how to take it to the next stage and bring it out into the world. So thanks for dropping by to talk to us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Orna. I look forward to our chat.
So tell me, before we kind of start talking about nano and fiction indeed and all the other things, tell me a little bit about yourself and, you know, you're a writer too. How did you come to nano? What's your own background?
Yeah, I'm a lifelong writer. I started writing when I was, 5 or 6. And I went on to get my MFA in creative writing after I graduated from my undergraduate degree. And I've been writing for a number of years and publishing mainly short stories. And around about 2001, a friend of mine who knew Chris Beatty, the founder of NaNoWriMo, did NaNoWriMo and told me all about this crazy idea of writing 50,000 words in a month. And I really did think it was crazy. I thought it was absolutely wacky. And strangely enough, I had no interest in doing it. But as I kept writing, another 5 or 6 years went by, and I really started to realize how my creative patterns were in a rut. My creative process, I was doing the same thing over and over. And so I was looking for ways to kind of rejuvenate my process and really shake things up. And it occurred to me that, hey, I should do NaNoWriMo. And I did it. And I just thought it was so creatively fulfilling. I discovered so much about writing and creativity by this new approach. And I think it made my writing more effective, especially that first draft. Just because I was locking up my editor and writing with abandon, I was really taking more risks. And that's what I needed in my writing, is taking more risks and being more vulnerable on the page. And then, you know, following plot lines that maybe beforehand I might have said, nah. The rational side of my brain might have ruled that out. And so coincidentally, around that same time, I was working for a nonprofit called the National Writing Project, whose mission is to improve the teaching of writing in the nation's schools. And I wanted to deepen my nonprofit management experience. And I also wanted to volunteer for another nonprofit. And it just occurred to me the National Novel Writing Month was down the street. And Chris Beatty, the founder, was an acquaintance of mine. So I shot him an email and asked him if there were possibilities to join the board. And we talked for a long time. And so I was on the NaNoWriMo board before I became executive director. But Chris stepped down soon after I joined the board, and he invited me to apply to be executive director, something I'd never considered before. So, yeah, here I am. It's the best job I've ever had. I get to write novels.
You get to write novels. Yeah, I was going to ask, what does the executive director of NaNoWriMo actually do on a day-to-day basis?
That's a huge question. I get to do webcasts like this. This is like one of my favorite parts of my job. I get to deal with a lot of the nitty gritty, all the like churning widgets of NaNoWriMo, you know, which require, you know, establishing a budget, you know, managing people, overseeing projects, raising money. We are a nonprofit. And we're a very paradoxical nonprofit in that we're very small in terms of budget and employees, 8 people in a $1.3 million budget, but huge in our reach, you know, like nearly 500,000 people signed up for our programs this year and people around the world. You know, do a lot of like things like PR, public speaking, a lot of like thinking about the future of NaNoWriMo, strategic planning, a lot of like partnerships with organizations like yours, thinking about how we can come together and really create a world of writers. That's what we absolutely believe, is that people become better human beings when they dive into huge creative projects and realize the value of being a creator, and that affects life beyond the page.
Absolutely. You're singing my song, Grant.
And all right.
I'd love to talk to you particularly from your sort of bird's eye view of all the fiction writers in the world about fiction and the power of fiction. We at Ally concentrate a lot on the publishing side of life, you know, about what happens after the draft has been turned into a publishable manuscript and then gone on through an editorial process into design and so on. We talk a lot about then how you reach a reader, but sometimes, we forget or we don't talk enough about that sort of original spark. And particularly, I mean, I write fiction myself. Fiction is, I would say, my own first love. And talk to me about the importance of fiction in the world.
Yeah. Do you have about a half an hour for this?
We'll give you 3 minutes.
Okay. I'll go for four. I think, I always say this is incredibly important, because I think a lot of times people trivialize fiction or trivialize novels as just being about entertainment as a way to pass the time. And when I hear that, I counter that with, I say, and I believe that we human beings are story making creatures. We tell stories, and that's how we understand the world. That's how we make meaning of the world. And you can go back to the very beginning of time. You know, the first cave paintings are stories, and they're telling those stories because they want to connect with the real world, and they want to tell about that real world they experienced, or a fanciful world too, and they want to bring it in and tell other people. And by telling those stories, you're connecting with other people, and you're building empathy for yourself, because you're seeing through your character's eyes. You're seeing how other people see the world, so you're understanding people and understanding the world in different ways. And it's really a way also to explore within yourself. It's a way to explore the cosmos. There's just so many interactions between creating a story and what meaning that has in real life. And I read this interesting statistic the other day. I think it was 75% of scientists became scientists because of the science fiction they read while they were growing up, And so that's just an example of how reading fiction, something that you think is for entertainment, it opens up the world in fascinating ways. And then you explore the world and you think about it differently. So, yeah, I think it provides connection, comfort. It helps us overcome fears. And like I said, go on another 26 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And I always think people who think that fiction is just entertainment haven't grown up in a country where it has been outlawed. Because as I did, actually, if you can believe it, when I was growing up, we were just coming out of a period of intense censorship in Ireland. Anyone who wrote an interesting book, I mean, every single great writer that Ireland has produced was banned by the government for anything that sort of deviated from Roman Catholic ideology. Mm-hmm. And it was so intense and so tightly felt and such sort of a tool of power to suppress the stories, because the government were under no illusion as to how powerful story is. And it's only when it's all around us, I think, as we are so lucky to have it now in so many different formats, that we begin to take it for granted. I know for myself, it completely opened my world. And what you spoke about there, empathy, developing empathy and our ability to understand lives that are very different from our own, which seems to be a very important human quality. I too could go on for half an hour, but let's move on a little and talk a little bit about Nano, because your growth has been extraordinary. And world domination seems to be on the cards at the moment. Tell us about that.
I like that. I like that we're in the world domination category, because that's what we're shooting for, really. Our very premise of our existence is that everyone has a story to tell and that everyone's story matters. And so we exist to provide access so that people can come to NaNoWriMo, and we will help and support them reach those goals and realize their creative potential. And so, you know, it does grow astronomically every year because of that. I think people do have a story to tell and they really want to do that. And so way back in 1999, you know, it was Chris Beatty and 21 of his friends. And Chris had no intention of starting this creative phenomena or this creative revolution in the world. He just wanted to write a 50,000 word novel. And he did it the first time and loved the experience. So, you know, next year rolled around and he said, let's do it again. And about 150 people showed up. And then the third year, like, let's do it again. Let's like add a little website to it so we can keep track of everybody, since we had 150 people last year and like 5,000 people signed up that year. And so since then, it's just been a wild sort of viral spread. We don't make marketing investments. We don't advertise. We get an amazing amount of press that just kind of comes to us. But it's really about people tweeting about it, posting on Facebook, writing blog posts. And so this year, as I think I said earlier, we had nearly 500,000 people sign up in all of our programs. That includes about 350,000 for NaNoWriMo in November. And then we have our Young Writers Program, which is a version of NaNoWriMo for kids and teens. And about 100,000 kids and teens signed up. And we also, as part of that, send free classroom resources to 2,000 schools across the nation. So everything's free. That's the premise. We provide everything free because we want everyone to write a novel. And then we have Camp NaNoWriMo, which happens in April and July. And it's not a real camp, although that'd be fun, maybe someday. It's a kind of more casual version of NaNoWriMo. So it has a very flexible word count. You can write 10,000 words or 60,000 words. You can write a script or a novel or a collection per year. So, and then we have, you know, we keep flushing out these programs. So before NaNo, we have what we call NaNo Prep. So in September and October, we provide a number of resources and events like webcasts to help people conceptualize and plan their novel if they're so inclined. And then right now, in January and February, we have an initiative called I Wrote a Novel, Now What?, where we're trying to beef up our ability. So many people, after they write a novel, they really are like, now what? They're like, I've got this completed novel, but editing and revising is a whole different thing. So we're providing more resources, conversations, and events to help people edit their novels and also learn about publishing if they want to publish their novels.
Fantastic. Yeah, which is kind of where we're coming in. I think we're going to be doing some blog posts specifically about that. And, you know, editorial is, I think the first time you write a story, you know, and when you finish that first draft, you're on such a high and you have done something that's absolutely amazing. But writing fiction's really hard, and writing long form fiction, writing novels, is hard work. So the first flush is fabulous and it's creative and it all pours out. And particularly, I think I just love the way the mad deadline and the crazy word count in a month, just as you talked about earlier, liberates something, you know, that is very sort of present for all writers. That's of conviction if you're going to get the word count done, which is just fantastic. Then editorial is completely, you've got to take off one hat and reach over here and put on a completely different sort of hat. And you know, I think of it in terms of the stages of the creative process. I think it's the same no matter what you're making. There is the sort of the wild get it out there, and then there's the deepening and the refining. So even before you edit, you've got to kind of deepen and make sure that the work says what you actually meant to say, and you probably find great gaps in it, you know, so you need to add more after the month is over and you have your word count. You know, if you're going to end up with 50,000 words, you probably, you know, need to write 70,000 and then cut back. So is this the sort of thing that you're talking to people about, and how do they come together around this?
Yeah, I think exactly what you said. It's a very different process between writing and revising, and especially when you write your novel NaNoWriMo style. You know, you really are writing it fast and furiously. And a NaNoWriMo novel probably needs more editing and revising than what the more conventionally written novel might. A lot of people might conventionally kind of write and do a type of revising while they're writing that first draft, where with NaNoWriMo, I think most people is more focused on forward. So
it is an entirely different cap, but I think sometimes people, when they hear revision and editing, they think of the red marker their teachers had in class, you know. Like, it can be a really intimidating process, I think, because it is so different.
But I think they think about it in a little bit too much of severe and stringent terms. And I think I actually want to sell revision as this fantastic creative moment. It's different than writing the rough draft, but it's every bit as creative. It's just a different type of creativity. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different, you know, it is a big question. How do you do it? And I think everybody just has to find their way and find their way to like doing it, what works for them. And so, we try to NaNoWriMo is never prescriptive in terms of like how to do something, not our role.
But we try to include a lot of voices of experts and create a lot of conversations within NaNoWriMo.
I mean, we're fundamentally a writing community, so our forums are buzzing all the time. And so you can find a lot of, you know, vision and editing tips just from your peers, you know, whether that's on Twitter or Facebook or in the NaNoWriMo forum. So yeah, we try to just, you know, kind of switch gears as every writer has to do. You do that first draft and hopefully you take off a period of time so that you can gain some distance and look at it objectively. And then you jump in to revise. And I was just talking with somebody yesterday who posed an interesting question. She really loves NaNoWriMo because she gets this great feeling of forward momentum. You know, she can see her word tracker and her graph going up every day, but she doesn't feel that for revision. So she's asking me, how do you track your revision progress? Do you have any answers, Orna?
It's an interesting question. I love the revision. I think of it as re-envisioning, you know, kind of going back to the start and thinking about, you know, what's at play here. So you're absolutely right. First thing you got to do is take that break. And I think it's really sensible that you guys are here at this time of the year, you know, so that has allowed things to cool off. So you go back in and you kind of read as a reader first. And at that point, I think it's really helpful to, rather than looking at what's not right, is to pick and choose what really is right and to highlight the bits that you love. And in a sense, they become the kind of standard bearer then. And that's what we call the deepening process. So, you know, in my understanding of it, and as you say, everybody thinks about it differently, there are seven stages in the writing process. The first is the intention to do it, and there's mm-hmm. the investigation and the incubation. They're the first three kind of phases, and they happen sometimes unconsciously. Then there are sometimes with preparation, as you're encouraging the pre-nano thing mm-hmm. to do. So that's when you're making notes and just doodling and moodling and letting it sit and sleeping on it and, you know, getting to know the characters yourself. And it's all very free form at that stage. Then the first draft, which is that month, you know, get it all down. The shitty first draft, as we always say, you know, let it be just awful. It really doesn't matter. The most important thing is the word count. Just get it out. Right. And then stage five would be what we call deepening. And that will be, so when you look at what you've got and you draw big circles around what you love, first of all, so not diving in there with a red pen, you know, diving in there with a blue mm-hmm. pen or a green pen and saying, this works, you know, and holding that up and then looking at what doesn't. I mean, very strategic. So making lists, I think, you know, about mm-hmm. what's there that you would like to change, and you can end up with a very long list, and then you just go back and you do it. And as you see yourself crossing off the various bits, now it changes, because when you make a change in a novel, it's like a squishy thing. You press down over here and something pops up over there. But mm-hmm. nonetheless, having that list and knowing what you're doing. So I think everybody would agree that a first draft is easier if you have an outline. Mm-hmm. I think the editing process is much easier if you have the tasks already written out and you kind of know what you're doing as you sit down to it each day. And then the joy of manipulating the language and getting a better word, you know, getting a noun that really, mm-hmm. really is there, and bringing in the senses, bringing in the, you know, the sensory mm-hmm. experience of taste and touch. And we talk a lot about what we see, but maybe not so much about the other senses. Right. All of that's great fun, I think. And that's, I completely agree with you. It's every bit as creative as the actual first draft process, perhaps even more so.
Uh-huh. I agree. And I think there's just, it's so, so wonderful, that deepening that you're talking about. I mean, that's where the real joy and meaning comes. And also you get, I mean, hopefully you get this sense. I mean, I think like sometimes after NaNoWriMo, your novel can look like a very messy room. But in revising, you're really cleaning it up, you know? So when you talk about finding that perfect word or that perfect sentence, it's so wonderful to like then, you know, kind of reshape this room or redecorate it and pick things up. And that's what should happen to your novel as you revise it. Although that said, the caveat is that like revising does put a certain degree of pressure on one. And you do have those days where I think it's very easy to have those days where you're just like, I'm a horrible writer.
Oh, yeah.
I never should have started this novel. You can get very dark, put it that way. I don't know any writer who doesn't get very dark in revision or have those tough days, but those are just part of the process and you just have to accept that. And I like your blue ink a stage, because I do think as writers, we tend to really sometimes be overly critical about ourselves and our work. And I think like it's good to remind yourself of like the bright points, the bright spots, and to write towards those. I mean, I used to teach creative writing, and I thought some of the best advice was the author Raymond Carver. When he taught creative writing, he always started, you know, he tried to focus the whole conversation on the strengths of a writer, on the strengths of a story, and to write towards those strengths. And I think too often people like focus on the weaknesses. And, you know, it's really the strengths that are going to carry the story. And that's what you should look for in revision, is how to build on those.
Absolutely. And that, in a sense, is then what you take forward into the next first draft. So, right. You know, when you've been through this entire process once and you do NaNoWriMo next year, it's a different, the first draft comes out in a different way, and you're bringing your strengths in, and you become more aware of them, I think, as well. Yeah. I presume you have repeat people who come and do it every year.
No, it's amazing. Just on Friday, I talked to somebody who, now I'm forgetting how many words she's written. She's written more than 500,000.
And she's done it since 2002, and she's won every year but one. And it's not surprising for me to encounter somebody like that. I talk to a lot of people who've done NaNoWriMo for 10 years.
And so we do have a lot of repeat participants, and even some of our very successful novelists, like Hugh Howey, wrote Wool, his best-selling Wool, during NaNoWriMo.
And not a lot of people know that, maybe.
Yeah, you know, he said that he wouldn't be a writer without NaNoWriMo. He was a very dedicated writer before NaNoWriMo, but NaNoWriMo really helped him, produce more, and it taught him certain lessons about writing. And so he does NaNoWriMo every year.
Yeah.
You might say he does it every month at this point. He's so prolific. But then there are authors like Marissa Meyer. She does NaNoWriMo every year, and she's another best-selling author. So yeah, a lot of people, and a lot of these published writers, when I said Hugh Howey, it seems like he does it every month. A lot of the writers do. Like I talked to a lot of our published writers, and they'll need to complete a draft to write a new novel, not because their schedule with their publisher doesn't always coincide with November, of course. So they'll do their own private NaNoWriMo in March or April. And on this subject, I think like when I was talking about, who was asking, how do you track progress in revision? I think one of the secrets of revision is kind of similar to writing the rough draft, in the sense that you need to set a goal and a deadline. And I think the goal is different, because it's not writing 50,000 or 75,000 words. It's more about that checklist that you were talking about, when you make a list of what you need to accomplish in the next draft. And it's a little less precise, because you don't have 30 days. You know, it's not mathematical necessarily. But I think there's a danger in revision. You can keep noodling with that first sentence or that first chapter, and you can noodle with the words literally for eternity.
Grant, I gotta tell you, I am that person.
I'd spend a good 50 years on each novel, because I actually love the noodling too. But the thing is, you'll never get the novel done, and I think like a deadline is really important with each stage of revision, or it's just gonna take too long. And I'm that person too, and I've written. So some of my past novels just took way longer than they should have. And I think that having that deadline, it's interesting what that does to your creative mind. It puts pressure on you. So instead of like, you know, sometimes without NaNoWriMo, a lot of our authors, they write less in the rest of their lives. And it's because, you know, NaNoWriMo is such a big thing, and they have this galvanizing community and the pressure of the deadline. And so they're really hyper-focused and extreme during November. But it's hard to do that all year round. And not that anyone should be that all year round. But the thing is to keep that creative momentum going. And, so a deadline is a really good thing to keep some creative pressure on yourself and to keep you accountable. So I'm really experimenting with ways to track my revision and to be more of a finisher.
I am so much in agreement with you, and I'm really interested, because your background, as you say, is the MFA, and, there is this sort of perception in that kind of world. So, I think genre writers accept completely that, the more I write, the better I get, the more right. books I have to sell, the more readers I get, and they're quite happy to write quickly and put stuff out quickly and not fret, shall we say. Whereas in the sort of the creative writing, MFA, litfic, poetry world, there's a lot of holding on to stuff. And I was really interested, to hear you talk at the beginning about how doing NaNoWriMo was liberating for you, because I'm coming to feel that a lot of that is just a form of resistance, that it actually doesn't matter what kind of writing will come out the way it wants to come out, and that challenging ourselves to write more quickly and indeed deepen, with a deadline and edit more quickly and get it out there and move on to the next one is there for every writer. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think everybody has their own sort of internal that's related. So I think you just have to find that time you need, I mean, there are obviously some great novels that take 10 years to write, and that, Donna Tartt tends to take that long. So I'd hate to put her on a yearly schedule. But I do think that sometimes, I think it is finding that pace. I mean, as Hugh Howey told me, we have this perception that writing fast or writing more, doesn't produce as quality of writing. But I think the opposite is often true. Maybe we overprivilege the notion of spending a lot of time on something. And I think it's good for a writer to recalibrate that or evaluate that premise. Because sometimes writing fast can produce, just like my NaNoWriMo experience, when I found that I was taking more creative risks, you do take more creative risks when you write faster. And so I try to actually bring that NaNoWriMo formula to my revision. If I need to write a new scene, I'll oftentimes just bang it out, to try to get it in there, because again, it's like a form, you're always somewhere between a first draft and, you're always kind of writing new stuff. I think every writer, it's a real judgment call. And even like, it's always like people always ask that question, how do you know when you're finished with your novel? There's no recipe for that. You have to decide what finishing is and how you want it to look. Or you have to decide that with your editor.
I think I remember an editor saying some years ago, a novel is finished when everybody's had enough. It's kind of, you just can't go there anymore. And no matter, even if there is something still to be done, they'll let it go. And there's another one coming.
I think that's the best advice. That's the way I feel about everything I finish. Sometimes it's just like, I've spent myself on this, so it's time to move on to something that's more exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. So what countries are you in now? I know London had fantastic NaNoWriMo things going on, and where else can people kind of tap into the light?
Yeah, London is a really vibrant region for us. We have a lot of writers in England. So we're not National Novel Writing Month. We're International Novel Writing Month, more precisely. I'm not sure if this year we're on every continent, but in past years we've had writers on every continent, including Antarctica. Wow. So maybe we should have a special collection of NaNoWriMo novels in Antarctica. But yeah, we're global. We're in more than 200 countries. We are in Kenya and Uganda and Pakistan. So we really do. It's really interesting to watch NaNoWriMo grow around the globe. We really want to be everywhere. And we have, to that point, it's not like people are only signing up online. Of course, we have access that way, but we have more than 900 municipal liaisons. And so these are volunteers in different communities who hold what we call write-ins. They're gatherings where people can come and write together. Because one of our premises is that writing doesn't have to be a solitary act. There's this mythology of the writer writing alone. But, there's studies actually about this, that people are more creative even if they're just writing silently next to other people. And so we try to facilitate that. And we've really built an amazing writing community around the world, live and online. And then we also have nearly 1,000 libraries through our Come Write In program, where they do the same thing. They host local gatherings. They have local events. Sometimes they'll have, you know, published authors come in and speak. And they really, so writing is really a community thing with us.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the future, are there plans there that we should know about or would like to hear about? Anything new kind of coming down the track?
Other than the world domination you mentioned?
I think you're already there with that, actually.
You know, it's really, we have another, I mean, we have a number of programs that we want to really expand, including our Young Writers Program, perhaps most primarily. We've invested a lot in developing this fantastic new website, which we're planning to roll out this year. It's really going to be the best writing platform for teens in the world. You know, we're putting a lot of great resources into it. And so that's our main thing right now. And then we're looking to expand that library program. We really feel like libraries are a really effective way to you know, expand our reach in the community and make more writers, you know, have them meet each other and form kind of these writing clubs or writing groups. And then, you know, we really want to be not just an event. You know, a lot of people think of NaNoWriMo as just happening in November, when that, actually that's not true. We are a year-round nonprofit, and we do do events and initiatives, you know, throughout the year, but we want to beef those up more. So which will inevitably be a redesign of the NaNoWriMo site, you know, once we kind of get the funding and the resources for that. But, you know, we'd really like to build it so that people can share their writing online, so that they can form writing groups online. Because people find, you know, they really find themselves, as writers in our writing community. We're really successful that way. In our forums in November, people post as many as a million forum posts, you know, so it's very active. And so we just want to keep building that community and help people to write together all year round.
Wonderful. And can I just ask then about publishing and where publishing comes into that? Because I have a particular interest in young people and publishing. I feel that, yeah, you know, we all know that writing is incredibly empowering and transforming and transformational in so many ways. I believe that so too is publishing, you know, the act of the, yeah, public word and putting it out there. So, talk to me a bit about publishing and where that fits into the overall plans.
I totally agree. I think if your aim is to publish, I always call it, you know, it is part of the creative journey, you know? So when both of us emphasize the revision is a creative exercise, so is publishing to me. Mm-hmm. And they should all work together, because this novel is a gift that you're giving yourself in the world, and publishing it should also be part of that gift. So it doesn't have to be necessarily about business and commerce and money. So publishing isn't as emphasized in our mission. You know, we're really focused on helping people realize their creative potential. But since publishing is some people's end goal, we want to support that, mainly through our I Wrote a Novel Now What Months. And so we really try to generally offer an educational approach, you know, like they're just... The publishing world is changing so fast, and it's becoming so complicated, whether you're traditionally published or self-published, you know, so we try to just open up the discussion. We try to provide resources. For instance, this month in our I Wrote a Novel Now What Months, we're doing a webcast with Brooke Warner that's sponsored by Nook. And she is the executive editor of She Writes Books, and she's worked both in traditional publishing and self-publishing. So she's offering like her viewpoints and advice and tips and things like that. And we have like a tweet chat with an agency where people are offering advice on how to find an agent. That's where we really are with that. And we've also worked with a number of self-publishing companies over the years, and I don't know how long this goes back, but at least 5 or 6 years for people who win NaNoWriMo, and that win means reaching 50,000 words, they can get a free copy of their novel. Create Space used to do that, and then Fast Pencil did that this year. So, you know, that's a really special thing. Like you said, when you hold a bound copy of something you've written in your hands, it's an amazingly special feeling. We just want to encourage people to, however they define their creative journey, we want to help support them to do that.
That's fantastic. And will there be a publishing section on this fantastic new website that's coming?
We haven't planned it yet, so I'm not going to make any promises, but we'll have some.
I'm throwing that in.
Yeah, definitely a lot of wonderful resources. Yeah, we want to build out all these programs.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Okay, Grant, listen, it was just wonderful to talk to you, and delighted to be able to take part in, you've written a novel now, what, a month, and to talk to your people about publishing and how great it is and how relatively easy. Yeah, sure, it's complicated if you want to know everything about it, but it has never been easier actually to take your words and bring them to other people, which is what I think Nano is about, and what we're about. As you say, the act of publication isn't necessarily about having a bestseller. It's the old definition of making your words public, which is just an amazing thing to do. So thank you for the opportunity to hook in with you and help with all of that.
Thank you, Orna. Yeah, it was a joy to talk to you.
Indeed, as always. And we'll talk to you again soon and catch up with you when all these new plans come to fruition.
That sounds wonderful.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alliance of Independent Authors Insights interview podcast. You can find out more author publishing advice tips and tools at Allies Self-Publishing Advice Center, www.selfpublishingadvice.org. For more information about being more creative, visit ornaross.com. Now, go write and publish.